Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. You can find more information on the podcast and see other episodes at dsmsports.net. And of course, we're on iTunes and Stitcher. You can also follow me on Twitter at njh287. Really cool episode for you guys today. We're going to be delving into the world of VR in sports. VR stands for virtual reality. Not so much on the training side and the coaching side. There's definitely a big piece of that as well. But we're going to be talking about how sports teams can use it to really enhance fan experiences and bring them closer to the team, make them feel close to those players that they love so much. We're going to be talking to Ben Smith. He is CEO of LaDuma. They are doing some really cool work in the VR space in all sorts of verticals, but sports in particular is what we'll focus on today. Is they are doing some groundbreaking work with the LA Galaxy with a VR series, which is just tremendous. I've experienced it myself. But we're going to learn more about VR in just a moment with Ben, but first we have this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool is all about making quick photos on the go and quick graphics on the go. It's a quick photo editor, an app, a free app, with purchasing in it, so definitely a freemium app. There's a lot of purchases to make if you want in it. And it's called Over. It basically is called Over because it allows you to overlay a lot of things. It also has some built-in, quote-unquote, free artwork that is put out every day. So you can check in on the free artwork every day and even save some good ones that you want to save to use for future purposes. You can add text onto this artwork. Of course, you can use your own photos. And what I really like about the photo function is you can import your own photos and then zoom and crop and add text and filters appropriately. So it allows you kind of to do all that stuff in one place instead of having to crop first and then zoom and then add your filters and text and then export it and all that. So it's a very helpful tool to have it all centralized. I think you'll find some good use cases for it. Not necessarily something you'll use every day, but find a couple things that you can do well with it and stick to it. You can add some shapes on top of things. You can add some different fonts. If you find a good font you like, you can save it for future use. And so really a pretty neat little tool with quite a bit in there that's always growing every day with new artwork and new fonts and new symbols and such being added. So have some fun with it. Give it a go. Play around. Try something new. It's always good to try something new on social. And take a look. So it's called Over. It's a free app for Android and iOS. That's this episode's helpful tool. And we will be right back to delve into a whole other world, the world of virtual reality, as we talk to Ben Smith, CEO of LaDuma. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool, and now we are delighted to be joined to have by Ben Smith. He is the CEO of LaDuma. They are doing some incredible stuff in the VR space in all different industries, especially sports is what caught my interest, of course. So welcome to the podcast, Ben.
Thanks a lot, Neil. Real pleasure to be here. I've listened to it in the past, so nice to be a guest, finally.
very much obliged. I'm really psyched to talk about everything VR. What you guys are doing is just mind-blowing. I was lucky enough to experience some of it myself, and I want to hear all about it. But before we get into our interview, I want to hear about you. So we always like to get to know our guests. So, you know, tell us a little about where you came from, how you came up in the space, how you got involved in VR, and you know, how you got to your role today.
Sure. It's, I guess, a very unusual path in some ways when you would look at it on paper. But I've always been fascinated by telling great stories. Storytelling has always been really something that I found myself in one way or another. So, you know, as I came through school, my father was a movie producer with feature films in Hollywood. And so I immediately was drawn to that as where I should go and what I should do and attempt to follow in his footsteps, which is what I did try to do for a little while. And, you know, obviously the movie business is full of, you know, nepotism and families helping each other out. So I ended up on some very cool movies and working with some, you know, amazing movie stars. You know, the first ever movie I worked on was Sean Connery and Catherine Zeta-Jones, and to name but two of that cast. So it was kind of plunged into this world very quickly, very early, and was fortunate enough to travel around the world as a location manager, as an assistant director, working on stuff like Hannibal and Cold Mountain and Alexander. And eventually, you know, just through working in the business, discovered that, you know, I didn't love it as much as my dad. And you know, to me, I always have to love what I do. And so I decided to walk away from an industry that I had all the contacts in the world in and go into an industry that I thought I'd love more, but I didn't have a single contact in the world in. And so I went into the sports media, and I became a journalist and worked my way up through local news organizations to the Times of London newspaper, where I had a week's work experience, and managed to convince them to let me stick around after that. And so I eventually ended up being deputy editor of their football, their soccer section. I was in charge of it. Yeah, I was pretty determined to make sure I stuck around, and it was, you know, a great experience, a wonderful newspaper, a very well respected newspaper, I guess, in this country, and it was a fantastic learning curve for me. And then very fortunate that the BBC offered me a position to go and work for them, which I took. I was interested in broadcasting and getting into television, which is what I did. So I started off on their digital side of things with their website, the BBC Sport website, which is one of the most, I guess, popular sports websites, certainly in Europe and Asia, around the world. And then I moved into television and radio, and that was as a broadcaster covering soccer mainly, but all sports, and that was what then 4 years down the line led me to be offered an opportunity to get involved in this space, which I just see, yes, it's different from anything I've done in the past, but it's very much a step in the next direction I see of storytelling. And, you know, in many ways, one of the most fascinating and compelling ways to tell a story that I've ever seen.
So how did you first even come into the knowledge of what VR is, and what was your first experience with it? Did you have that sort of that light bulb wow moment when you realized there was something special here?
Yeah, I'd seen some bits and pieces, I think, of 360 video. Which is interesting and great and quirky. I remember the first time I was put in a headset, I was shown a music concert. I think it was Paul McCartney. Something
that's not that way to be introduced to it.
Yeah, the guys at Within had done something with Paul McCartney, and I remember thinking, "Wow, he's right there. He's just, you know, he's on stage. I'm on stage with him. He's playing the piano, and wow, there's a whole bunch of people there." But I've got the best seat in the house, and I thought, you know, how else could I get the chance to stand on stage with you know, one of the most famous guys in the music business? And that, you know, that's the thing I've seen ever since with VR. As soon as you put somebody, you know, in a headset, you completely open their eyes to the possibilities of this medium and this kind of content, and it's an amazing thing to watch happen. You know, we're fortunate that the stuff we produced has always had that reaction for people. You know, I've always said to my team, I want stuff that makes people go wow, and you know, as you say, you were at the StubHub with me 10 days ago or so now, and you know, to hear people, you know, kind of coming out with the reactions they did when they were watching the content we've shot with the Galaxy was exactly what you'd want to hear, and it kind of brings out the kid in people, and that's I get a big kick out of that.
And how much of that is an opportunity and also just a challenge too? I mean, I can completely relate and understand that every single time you see someone experience VR for the first time, especially when it's well done, they do have that wow moment and that whoa, this is so cool type experience. But you know, for people that have never had the experience, they think of VR, they think of, okay, I need to get an Oculus headset, or I need to have this and that, and it's only a select few that are experiencing it at a certain time and place and location. So how much of it is in your role is making sure that it is consumer friendly and accessible and something that people don't see as a novelty, I guess?
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest challenge for the whole industry, Neil. I think, you know, there's no question that when we show anybody the content, they love it. There's no question that it has a place in kind of digital storytelling across all industries and all mediums, but particularly in sports. The challenge for everybody is convincing the public that this is something they need to buy into, that it's accessible to them, that there's no reason why they can't, you know, enjoy this. I showed, believe it or not, I was trying to explain to my mum the other day what it was that I did, And I thought, you know, it's pointless me standing here trying to explain what virtual reality is to my mother. It just isn't going to happen. So I went into the car, grabbed a headset, brought it in, put it on her, and obviously she had that on me. We shot some stuff with Wimbledon this summer just gone at the Wimbledon Tennis Championships. She loves going to the Wimbledon Tennis Championships when she can get tickets. So I thought, I'll put her there and see what she thinks. And immediately, she loves it. She was stunned then when I took the phone out at the end and said, she just said, oh, it's just on your phone. And I was like, yeah, you can plug into this stuff really easily. It's not something that need be expensive. You know, a cardboard headset can cost you, less than $10 in some cases. And you've already got the most important bit, which is the smartphone. That's the key to this. It's not 3D television where you've got to spend $5,000 on a big piece of hardware that might all go wrong. You already have the key to VR in your pocket. And I think that's what convinces me that actually this will get to the point now when everyone will realize its potential.
And making sure everyone understands that yes, it does not take a 4 or 5 figure investment to experience what's an incredible VR experience. And I mean, you said it right there that it can be just a pretty cheap cardboard to enable that powerful device in your pocket to enable these experiences.
Absolutely, Neil. And I think that's the key to this. I think with sports brands that we've spoken to and worked with all across the world, the recognition is that actually, being able to give these headsets away to their fans is something that is actually very easy to do. For a sponsor, that space on the front of a headset, especially with a mass activation. We were talking to an NHL team who wanted to give 18,000 away at their home opener this start of the season. And then wanted to bring a sponsor in, give them the space on the front of that headset. You know, you could imagine the photos of kind of mass participation VR inside a stadium and how that would get picked up by the mainstream media. In some ways, Pokemon Go did something for augmented reality that made it mainstream very, very quickly. And when people now who work in AR say, when someone says, what do? You just say, well, you know that Pokemon Go game? And it's explained. I think what we will see is a moment, an event, maybe even a piece of content that tips VR into that kind of public consciousness. And it won't take long. And from that point on, it's going to be fascinating to see the demand go up for VR content and suddenly the realization from everybody that, wow, we they're thinking about it right now, no question. We've seen the change even in the last 6 months. But when that public demand comes, it will be fascinating to see the scramble to get behind it, I think.
And let's talk about that. I mean, I know Leduma is one of the leaders out there, one of the innovators, and it's an increasingly, I don't want to say crowded space by any means, but there are a handful of competitors, especially in the sports space, who are doing VR, whether it's live streaming, whether it's produced packages, whatever the case may be. And it seems like you guys all may be competing for business, but at the same time, you guys are all trying to get this more mainstream acceptance and embrace of VR. So whether it's a competitive company or Leduma that creates that wow piece of content, that Pokemon Go, to use that analogy, is that kind of the way you're looking at it? Where you guys, all the VR companies, kind of want to see the greater good grow and then get back to maybe competing for business after the fact?
Yeah, I agree, Neil. I think it's an interesting one when you're at the start. Of course, there'll be competition. I think right now the key for everybody is to keep innovating and keep pushing to try to create, amazing new developments. You know, we've seen, developments in Live and Next have really pushed the live space, which is no question an extremely challenging space to be in right now because. You've got to beat 4K television and all the glitz and glamour and replays and stats that go with that, and that's a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. You've got to push the camera systems and make sure the image quality is getting better all the time. We've got to innovate in the way we move cameras with drones and gyroscopes on the ground. I think the key for all of us right now, and you're right, it's increasingly crowded, is that we're scrambling to try and do something that pushes this on and on and on. And in a way, the competition is ensuring that we're improving the quality of our content, the way we deliver it. The interest from brands is getting there when Coca-Cola do something or Budweiser do something, then you guarantee that Toyota sit up and think, well, why aren't we doing that? So all of that's great, and I welcome it massively, because the thing with something like this kind of a new technology, you'll have a healthy skepticism, and I'd encourage that from, you know, brands and sports organizations. I think, you know, everyone should be very careful and watchful when they enter the space. They need to make sure they're doing it with the right partners, someone who isn't just going to hand them the content and say, listen, good luck with this, guys. There's someone who's going to understand the story behind it, help them, advise them on which kind of content is going to work and what perhaps isn't as compelling, and then talk them through how you monetize it, how you engage with your fans. I think that's the key for brands right now. And you know, we're in a place right now where everybody wants to see this content and loves it, and that's great, and because it's new and different, there's a lot of great positive comments coming out of that. That won't last forever. That really won't last forever, because you know, people will become more savvy to what works in VR, what is interesting, and what actually is just gimmicky, and that will also drive the quality up. And I think anything that improves quality of the experience, the way it's delivered, we really welcome, and we want to be part of that race, if you like.
I definitely think we're at that inflection point where the technology is basically there. We know that fans love it. We know that teams love it, and it's just a matter now of connecting all the dots so that you go from the currency of attention and engagement to monetization and being able to justify those investments, I guess.
Yeah, very much so. I think that's the leap that people are dealing with right now. But we're finding people are getting there now, even in the last few months, Neil. That's changed. And, you know, Budweiser doing stuff in VR with clever activations around beer holders turning into goggles. You know, we've seen all those clever moves, and that's certainly got everyone on their toes. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything to the varying, or I guess, disparity across the board of the quality of VR? And what Leduma does in my sense is top of the line, you know, in terms of the quality you guys produce, whereas, you know, a quote unquote cheaper VR company may come along and just give you, not, I don't want to say crap, but something that's not quite up to par. is that like a concern for just the general VR industry? If you guys see a VR activation and it's not of quality, does that kind of just hurt what VR is known as this general perception of businesses and of consumers?
Yeah, unquestionably it does. I'm confident that, you know, the public will be the guys who ultimately decide whether VR succeeds or not, and they will also be the ones who decide what is good quality content and what isn't. I guess what you're referring to, I think, is that, you know, could fans potentially be turned off by a bad piece of VR content and make a decision based on something they see? Yeah, we, you know, we see stuff all the time that is done for the right reasons, because people are aware of the space and believe that, you know, they want to get involved. Perhaps they think that live is really important, so that they buy a camera and do a live 360 video. But without understanding what makes that compelling, you end up delivering something that is, you know, that is crap, let's be honest, Neil. And that is, you know, no better, in fact, far, far worse than watching on the television. And when you get that point, then, yeah, that's difficult. But you can't, you know, everyone's trying. They're trying to do their best. You know, nice of you to say kind things about our content. We're very proud of the way we deliver it and the way we shoot it. We haven't bought camera systems that are out there on the market. We've created our own. We've worked very hard to make sure that ours is different, that it's bespoke, that it's something you can't buy on the shelf, if you like. And I think that shows in the quality of our content and the way we stitch it together. But yeah, it's a challenge for everybody. And I just hope that, you know, everybody, certainly the public, give the very best of VR a chance, because, you know, as I say, we've never had a bad reaction to it. And, you know, the only reactions I've had that are negative are people feeling very sad that they've left that place behind and quite want to go back into the headset to revisit it. So.
Well, let's talk briefly about the what Leduma is doing in really all industries. I mean, I know you know, you guys we're talking mainly because of the recent activation with the Galaxy, and you guys have done some incredible work in that space. But you guys are also all over the place in different verticals as well. Is sports and entertainment where you see the biggest opportunity for VR and for Leduma to grow, or are there other sectors that you think may rise even more quickly and embrace VR more quickly?
Well, it's been interesting because we, you know, sports and entertainment's where we kind of set our boundaries. We've done a lot of work in music and live events. You know, we shot recently with the Blues Brothers in Utah, and you know, putting you on stage with Dan Aykroyd and Jim Belushi,
wow,
is very cool, and you know, they don't play together very often these days, but to kind of capture that moment, to kind of keep it there and have it as something that people can revisit, it's a great experience as well. You're right on stage with the guys, you're sitting next to the drummer, you're in the front row of the crowd. I think those kind of experiences are wonderful. And we've shot at Wango Tango in California as well, which is a big concert this summer, and I hope to do more of that kind of stuff, because obviously the demand for tickets in these areas is always huge and often outstrips supply. So if you're able to offer people who can't maybe get in the opportunity, not only go in the front row, but maybe even go one better and sit on the stage, then that's interesting to us. Equally, Neil, we've been approached by companies in a whole wide variety of areas, in stuff like medical and education side of things, which is obviously an interesting space. It's not something we've deliberately attempted to get into, mm-hmm. but that's kind of the demand is there. The questions have been asked of us. So, you know, at this stage, I guess the sports industry we think is really interesting because of the huge number of fans out there wanting to feel a deeper connection to their favorite teams, their favorite players. They might live on the other side of the country from, you know, from the Packers or the Patriots. They might love, you know, Tom Brady or whoever, and they want to feel closer to that organization. And of course, social media these days, brilliant, clever video content helps you do that and makes you feel a part of things in a way that perhaps you couldn't in the past. And yet, we think VR has a huge opportunity to actually bring you one step even closer, to take the screen away and allow you to walk straight through that screen and be a part of the action, not just watching it. So that's where, you know, there's unquestionably potential there for the Premier League teams as well. You know, the massive appeal in China and the Far East, Australia, now North America. Mm-hmm. How do those teams give the fans at home a real sense of what it's like to be at that football club, part of the club, in the dressing room, around the fans ahead of kickoff? Can that help teams perhaps increase loyalty in the battle for fans, which has never been more competitive, I guess? And then at some point down the line, does that help them, you know, with their business heads on, help those fans become perhaps more engaged with their club financially, through merchandise and even content? So it's a very interesting space to us, and that huge number of fans, I think, is what kind of motivates us to help them feel closer.
And even delving further into the sports space of VR, you know, we're seeing a lot of different use cases with, you know, with trying to live stream a game, and you know, from our conversations offline, that I'm still not convinced that a consumer may want to be in a VR environment for a 3-hour football game. Yes. And I personally tend more toward the evergreen content. And then you have, you know, some of the VR use cases for practices, whether it's a quarterback, you know, being behind the huddle for, you know, even though he's sitting in a meeting room, you know, and training that way. And then of course what Leduma is really killing it with is the features and sort of the more evergreen content where the fan is really engaged with practice or an interview or a tour of the city or a tour of a home. And so I guess a long way of putting it is, was it a conscious decision for Leduma to go the route it has in the sports space, you know, versus the other, I guess, VR use cases that we're seeing out there?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think TV, you know, broadcasters on both sides of the pond are fantastic at what they do. You know, Sunday football in the US, college football on a Saturday. Mm. The coverage is brilliant. It's in depth. It has a great variety of, you know, features of analysis, of statistics, brilliant commentary. It's a habit for the public. It's something that they like to do. I like to pop and grab a beer out of the fridge and some chips and then, you know, watch a bit more and come in and out of it. To break that habit with VR is unquestionably going to be a massive challenge. I think there is a place for it with live sport, no question. Whether it's as a kind of value add somewhere along the line, I don't know. I mean, the challenge, I guess, to make VR really compelling is you need to be close enough for people to feel that they're with whatever it is they're looking at. And you know, the sidelines right now, it doesn't feel like that just yet. Whether there's a way of bringing, you know, wide cameras into play and all the rest of it, I'm sure that's not very far away. But whether it can really crack that dominance of brilliant, brilliant television coverage all across the world of our sports events right now, I don't know. That's a big question. For us, the fan engagement stuff was obvious because, you know, social media has showed that, you know, fans are desperate for every kind of little piece and clip of content you can give them that helps them get a little bit of more information about what it is they love. You know, whether that's a shot from inside the dressing room or locker room or just a bit from practice one day during the week. But, you know, that there's an audience for that. There's interest in that. And so the evergreen fan engagement stuff to us made a lot of sense. You know, as you say, it appeals to people all over the world. Doesn't matter if they miss it on the day, it could still be of interest 6 months down the line because it helps you learn a bit more about perhaps your favorite player, what makes them tick. Maybe it helps you understand them a little bit more. Certainly makes you feel closer to them, makes you feel you know, more in sync with their life away from the stadium. And so to us, that was interesting for all sorts of reasons, and certainly where we are right now, that's where the demand is for these organisations, despite, you know, interest in live or training, which Schreiber did brilliantly, by the way, at Stanford. The training space is interesting. Football is kind of, American football is where that makes a lot of sense because of you have those repeatable set plays, if you like, where you know the QB will be taking a snap from his lineman, and it all starts there. Soccer, almost impossible and much more fluid, as you know, to kind of replicate that. So for now, that's where we're going to stay with fan engagement. And I think we want to make sure we do it really brilliantly.
Definitely. And I know, just even thinking about the idea of, yeah, we could do some live streaming, but let's stick a camera in the middle of the pitch and or the middle of the court and try to stitch it all together that way. If you want a true 360 immersive experience, it's there's a lot of hurdles to overcome, and I can certainly see all sides of it there.
Yeah, we are close on, you know, live streaming. We can live stream 360 right now. Most people can. We're not so far away from live streaming 3D. The question is, do we want to? Hey, we'll wait and see.
And let's shift briefly and just having a great conversation right now. We got a few more minutes left with CEO of Laduma, Ben Smith. Let's talk about where the teams see the best use cases. When you guys are talking to the Galaxy or to other sporting clubs out there, is it really, you know, we are looking for a new way to reach and engage fans? We want to be seen as innovative, and you know, who ultimately is kind of you know, championing it throughout the organization? Is it digital officers? Is it coming from the league level, the sponsor level? A loaded question there for you, but I just love to hear about, you know, how the sport teams are. are responding to you guys and working with you guys.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and it's changed a lot over the period of 12 months. You know, the Galaxy guys, 12 months ago, there were maybe one or two who knew what it was and understood the potential that VR had. Now, that wasn't necessarily replicated at the C-level executives, and that was something that has changed dramatically over the past year. You know, now every sponsor we talk to wants to know how they will activate with VR, what they should be doing, they should be thinking. Every sports organization we walk into, you know, their top guy, their chief executive, their general manager, their president knows what VR is. And in one case was the guy driving it at NHL level. And that's interesting, you know, the change that's come about in that, from kind of slight ignorance in some ways to start with, which is completely understandable. There's so much stuff going on out there. Everything purports a new big thing. But it's changed dramatically. And now we never have a situation where we're having to educate people. Sponsors understand what it is. Everyone's got a strategy in place to know that this is something they have to deal with at some point in the next 6 to 12 months. Every organization, sports organization at a certain level, realizes that if they don't start thinking about this now, then they're going to the curve when what everybody else is doing. I guess there's something in that. There's competitive instinct in all of these organizations. It's what makes them so great on the field, but it all equally is important to them off the field. You know, the Galaxy were very keen to be seen as keep their reputation as being a dynamic, forward-thinking digital organization. They've obviously won awards and stuff for their social media approach and the way they've done things, and they were keen to keep that up. And that was something Chris Klein said, you know, at our launch event just a few days ago, that the Galaxy want to be first, and you know, what we've created for them is a first, and so that helps them feel like that. Other organizations, it doesn't matter so much being first. They just want to engage their fans in a way that is different and clever, and perhaps you know, encourages loyalty. Sponsors, of course, yeah, they love this because it's a way for them to capture the attention of an audience in a way that you can't on social media. You know, we these days, our attention spans and the various different media streams competing for our attention, I mean, we're right up there with a goldfish when it comes to our attention span. So, you know, for VR to fence somebody off for 2 minutes, for a sponsor, for an advertiser to have your attention in a world for 2 minutes is an incredible rarity. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you know, it, of course, product placement comes into the mix. You know, branding within the content comes into the mix. And, of course, the opportunity to sponsor those headsets does. So, yeah, across the board really now, Neil, I guess is the answer. There's interest and drive, and that's a big change on 12 months.
Yeah, I know it's hard to even consider that a Facebook video view is 3 seconds or less, or 3 seconds counts as a view versus, you know, VR. I could see spending, you know, dozens, if not half hour inside that environment, just, you know, taking through the action. And I know from personal experience, you know, working in the mobile space, that, you know, some customers, some prospects out there, some teams are of the mindset that, you know, we don't care if this mobile app, this mobile platform makes us a dime. We're investing in the fan experience, the fan engagement. Whereas others are saying, we are only investing in this platform if we can monetize it through sponsorship and marketing. Are you seeing sort of both sides of the coin out there, where some are just saying, you know, this is an investment and we see value in the fan engagement, whereas others are more, you know, we are only going to invest in this if we see a path to direct monetization, you know, tomorrow?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And, It's certainly, you know, both views we've heard in our conversations on both sides of the Atlantic and South Africa, where we're also based. You know, there are some organizations, as you say, who just say, we know we need it, tell us how we should do it, and let's get on with it. Great. Which is wonderful for us. I would say that probably accounts for 25% of the people we talk to. 75% of them, you know, the bottom line is important, and I understand that, because, yeah, of course, it's really important, and that's why we have to understand it so well, and you know, why I guess they're keen to talk to us, because we know how to help them monetize, we know how to make it attractive to sponsors, we can help them, advise them on activation, and you know, how to make sure they can do it within their app, whether that's through freemium content or whether it's through sponsor concept within the app, whatever it is. You know, there are always ways of doing it, and you know, we've spoken to teams in the Premier League, the NFL, the NHL, and revenue is important, no question. They realize they have a very sellable product on their hands, and they're not used to necessarily just having to write money off, that they, you know, they want to involve people who can help them there. So that's something we're increasingly seeing. You know, can we make VR work for us as well as our fans? And of course, you know, the question is yes. I guess the only difference is whether you want that money kind of up front, or whether you're prepared to wait and get a much bigger win off your fans further down the line.
Definitely. The way I like to look at it always is, you have something, you have content that is going to capture the attention of fans, and attention is what we're all after. You know, no matter what the platform is, if you have the attention of fans, then monetization can come from there, that engagement, that attention, for sure. But I'd love to hear about, you know, in the few minutes we have left here, what the process is like. I mean, I saw just a little bit of the Galaxy series, and I know there's just so much you guys produce, and it doesn't just happen overnight to get all that stuff shot and stitched together, and the players involved, and all the logistics. So I guess, what was the process? What goes into, you know, creating these VR series, from planning to shooting, editing, and ultimately delivering it to the fans.
Yeah, it's a partnership. You know, you've got to be very open, and I guess to hearing how we feel that you know, this is going to work best. And with the Galaxy, they were great. They were very open with their players. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to shoot in places that you know, not many people get to go, and with players who opened up their days and their lives to us and their families in some case. To show us their favorite spots in LA, to show the fans.
So,
I guess,
was it like storyboarding in advance, or is it just kind of, you know, it sounds like a good idea, let's go out there and shoot and we'll get some good content out of it?
Well, we were pretty structured in what we wanted to achieve. So there were there was, for each player, we had a concept, an idea of a kind of rough storyboard and how we wanted to go. That seemed to be the best way of doing it, because the player, you know, helped, became a part of that process, helped us identify the areas they thought might be interesting to talk about, where they wanted to be filmed, where they felt most comfortable talking about the city. And it's kind of, you know, the unique challenge of being a soccer player in a city that is like no other, for glitz and glamour and sports and all the rest of it, and tension. So it was very much a collaborative process with the Galaxy. You know, as I said earlier on, one of our strengths is our ability to help these brands tell their stories better than anybody else. And so we were in there from the very start, advising them on what we thought would be most interesting to fans, not just of the Galaxy, actually, but in fact, you know, soccer fans all around the world, number one, but fans, you know, people who just to be in LA for a few minutes and feel what it's like to sit on the beach when the sun goes down, or walk along Hollywood Boulevard, or, you know, walk up to the Hollywood sign and see that with your own eyes. We wanted to offer a kind of experience that not only painted the players in a allowed people to see them better, but also to give people an experience of LA and all the amazing things that offers. So that was really important to us. It was a travel experience, a sporting experience, something for the Galaxy fans, something for soccer fans all around the world, but also something that, you know, my wife or my mother could enjoy, because actually they could feel the sun, they could be on a beach, they could, you know, go and, you know, see what it's like in Rodeo Drive for you know, a couple of minutes. And that, I guess, to us is an interesting part of it. It's picking people up from wherever they are in the world and taking them to a place just for a few minutes, whether that be, you know, to chat things over with a favorite player or to a certain place. And that's the amazing thing about VR.
So what's it look like when you guys are, you know, walking down Rodeo Drive filming for a VR piece? Is it some crazy equipment that's going around there? Do you guys have multiple cameras shooting all angles? And what are people seeing and looking at when they're walking down the street there?
They won't really notice anything different, really. It's you know, you would imagine that it's a massive operation with you know, huge pieces of equipment. It really isn't. Not in our case. I can't speak for anybody else, but, you know, our rigs are very small. They're no bigger than, I guess, the outstretched palm of your hand with your fingers. Probably gives you an idea of kind of the rough size of our rig. Very small. They're very mobile. Wow. They can be left to places where people don't really notice they're there, and you know. Even if you're shooting with multiple rigs, I guess, you know, each one is always capturing every single angle that you can possibly imagine. So there's no hiding place. And, you know, I'll often look in our content and spot my guys hiding or pretending to be a passerby or whatever. It's a challenge, you know. It's a very unique challenge. It's an interesting challenge. But, it's not a kind of as... I guess, big an operation as you would expect. From the moment we gather the content, we're sending that back into our system with our stitching teams based in the US. They are pulling all this content together very quickly. You know, we're turning around projects within 24 hours in 3D, which we did with Wimbledon this summer. The speed is important. You know, often being able to turn around a piece of content very, very quickly is key for one reason or another. And you know, the Wimbledon Tennis Championships, we shot on day one. We wanted it to be available on day two or day three. So, wow. You know, that's key. And then the delivery there, either through the app we build for you know, the Galaxy or anybody else, or through any other means, I guess. It depends how they want it, whether they just want to put it out on Facebook and YouTube. But it's, I hope, it should be always a very slick operation.
Let's end real quick. I'd love to just sort of hear your perspective on, I mean, we touched on the Pokemon Go phenomenon and AR, and I mean, it doesn't seem like we're necessarily in a dichotomy of, you know, AR versus VR. You know, they can both have different use cases and coexist, but, you know, do you feel like there is a recognition out there that what VR is versus what augmented reality, what AR is there sometimes a confusion? Do people not know which is which? And is there a sort of a conflict where you have to choose, we're going to invest in this space versus this space?
I think it's, you know, our view as a business is that the two will become one very, very soon in the near future. You know, there are areas which complement each other, you know, hugely in each one. And I think, I don't think we see it necessarily as a ARV, VR or anything like that. I think we see it as two industries that very quickly will become one. You know, the both sides of you know, the industry right now need to understand the other better. That's certainly what we're doing right now. And we are, you know, learning very quickly about it. We are recruiting very quickly on that side of things. And because that's the way we believe it will go. You know, it makes sense for people once they're in a headset to have an experience that is VR and AR that can, you know, change their reality, that can bring up statistics that may allow you to be able to sit in a cinema and watch a movie with your friends who might live, you know, on the other side of the world. That you know, the AR VR space to us is a very interesting one. It will become something else, I believe, probably within the next 12 to 24 months. And I think however it ends up, it's going to be a very exciting space to be involved with it, and hopefully a very exciting space for all of you guys out there to see and experience.
Oh, it just to think about how rapid it's all going to evolve, you know, where we're going to be 5-6 years from now, let alone 5 or 6 months, it's just mind-blowing to think about. And I know Laduma will be at the center of it in some way for sure. I could pick your brain stuff all day, Ben. It's just so cool to hear about, you know, it's a technology that I'm still understanding, and every time I experience it, it blows my mind even more. But we're going to have a little fun coming up in our Behind the Lens with Ben segment. But first, that's episode's shareable stat, and we'll be right back with that.
Thank you so much again to Ben Smith, CEO of Laduma, for a great conversation there. Really enjoyed picking his brain about all things VR and what they did with the Galaxy. Really, really cool stuff. And looking forward to having a little more fun with Ben coming up shortly, you know, with our quick hitters. But first, we have this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat comes straight from the recent broadcast of a Thursday night football, an NFL game, on Twitter. It was the first ever NFL game broadcast on Twitter and the first of 10 games that we'll see on Thursday nights during this upcoming season. And the stat that comes from that broadcast is 243,000. 243,000, that is the number of viewers who watch the broadcast for at least 1 minute. Now, a lot of times, that's typically the number that you'll see for the average rating for a TV broadcast. And for the linear TV broadcast, the number was 15.4 million. So quite a bit of disparity there, but it depends how you look at that number. You have to realize that if you take into account, of course, the three-second view count, then the number increases to around 2.3 million for Twitter. But even 243,000, you know, how do you look at that number? Everyone that really values live sports is likely watching on TV because that's what they become accustomed to doing. Or they're at a bar, or they're at a friend's house that has cable. So it's about how can you attract more users to see this live content, and being ready for those cable cutters to come into the space. So how can we look at this number and really take something from it? Well, first off, you have the novelty feature with people just sort of checking in. And a lot of the feedback was really, how is this different? It may not be enough to just be a host of content, especially that live sports content, which is still the last bastion of the bundle, so to speak. And a lot of people that really, again, value that live sports content are watching it in a more traditional manner. So a lot of the feedback was, how is this different? Is it a curated Twitter timeline, especially your own personalized Twitter timeline there right underneath it? Is it tying in unique camera angles, letting you pick your own view for that particular broadcast? Is there interaction happening in the broadcast, in the Twitter feed below? Can you see what celebrities and NFL players are saying? Can you interact with other fans and really do some live polls or live discussion? So it's really got to think about how can Twitter not just reproduce and duplicate what we're seeing out there, but add something else to it and really be additive, which is what they ultimately want to do. Of course, their distribution channel as a place to see fresh live content is certainly viable, but to have some short-term gains, that to have a higher number than that 243,000, there's going to have to be something else to it in order to keep the attention for at least 1 minute or more. So take with it what you will, 243,000, the number of viewers who watched the Thursday Night Football debut broadcast on Twitter for at least 1 minute. That's this episode's shareable stat. Hope you think about it and ponder it. I'm sure you've seen it before if you're listening to this podcast. And we'll be right back to have a little fun with Ben Smith, CEO of Leduma.
Okay, that was episode's shareable stat. And now we are right back to talk with Ben Smith, CEO of Leduma. And we had a great conversation about all things VR and sport, all the great stuff we're doing with the Galaxy. Ben, you really knocked your interview out of the park. I really enjoyed it. Now, are you ready to go behind the lens with Ben?
I absolutely am now. Let's do it.
All right. You're up number one for you. Looking back on the film part of your career, tell me the coolest experience or film you worked on during your film career.
It was unquestionably meeting Sean Connery on Entrapment, a huge hero of mine, a fellow Scot, and just a great guy. Some incredible stories about him that I probably should keep private, so I will do. But yeah, a wonderful guy, amazing kind of movie icon, and genuinely starstruck.
And obviously the best James Bond, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, I love it. Nicely done. Number two for you, Ben. We kind of talked about this a little bit. Maybe it's going back to that Paul McCartney. And looking back, number two for you, the first sort of aha moment with VR and the moment you realize its power, maybe it was Paul McCartney, maybe something else as well, where it really just hit home that, hey, this is something really special here.
I think it actually came with the New York Times stuff when I was already involved in the space. I think it was the New York piece they did, which was brilliantly executed. I guess showed the potential of storytelling within that space. I guess it gave you some amazing views and made you feel like you were in a place. It took you in a helicopter over New York. It was brilliantly done. And I think it was definitely inspirational for me and, a great experience. If you haven't seen it, I would urge you to go and download it.
Yeah, they've really done a really good job being ahead in that space for sure with their app and everything they're doing. And really everything digital that New York Times does just seems like it's incredible. Number three for you, Ben. I'm talking not just VR here, but just in general. Tell me, which country is more ahead when it comes to digital media and sports? Would you say the UK or the United States?
I'm not just saying this because I'm on your podcast, Neil, but I would say the United States. It's still, the Premier League still looks to the US for kind of the next thing to do, really, within their digital content, no question. The expertise in general in terms of consulting still comes from the US. I think you guys, because of the access and the openness and the understanding, the media and the importance of the media within all of your organizations, your media get to go in the locker room after the game and talk to the players. That just would never, ever, ever happen here in the UK. All of that helps, I think. And, I think that continues to be the way. I think the gap is closing, definitely. There's a lot of very cool stuff being done by the English Premier League teams here in the UK. But at this stage, I'm giving the gold medal to the US and the silver to Team GB, just as it was in the Olympics, of course.
Very nice. Well, yeah, it blows my mind sometimes talking to sports pros in the UK where we take for granted the fact that that media and teams have access to players on a daily basis, whereas in the UK, you might be lucky to interview players, once a week, and it's mind blowing.
You'd be very lucky to interview a player once a week, Neil, and unfortunately, it's going more that way all the time. So it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. The clubs are understanding the power of creating their own content now. So rather than allowing, perhaps allowing media into to interview players. They'll do the interview on their own channels and put it out. So it will be interesting to see how that goes over the next 4 or 5 years.
Oh my, that is an entirely another podcast we could certainly have one day. Number four for you, Ben. Tell me the industry besides sport that you think will see the biggest growth in VR in the near future.
I think it's education. I think being able to, take kids on school trips to wherever you want to take them without getting on a bus or racking up costs or showing, surgeons how to operate on a patient. I think education makes a massive case really for being one of the growth industries in VR. Certainly it's, show, don't tell, I guess is always the rule. And if you can do that in teaching, then VR really is a way that you're able to do that in the most real, kind of scenario possible.
All right, number five for you, Ben. And certainly definitely want to see where VR goes in the education space. Just thinking about the possibilities, so much that can be done and to enhance there. But number five for you, I want to go back to your days working at the Times and in BBC Sport. Tell me the best game and the best player you covered in your days working in sports media.
The best game, I think the opening game 2014 World Cup in São Paulo, Brazil against Croatia, was pretty special. Obviously, a nation that just was desperate to see their heroes, do something special. Unfortunately, it wasn't to be, but a really special moment, unquestionably. And my favorite player, my favorite interview was definitely one Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I went to Stockholm for the day. I got on a plane. And he was waiting for me in the hallway of the hotel, and we went up to our room, me, the cameraman, and him, and we spent an hour talking. And he was just a superstar every step of the way. So yeah, he was unquestionably my favorite interview.
Ah, so cool! I love hearing about that. And Brazil certainly got their gold medal recently in soccer, so I'm sure they're happy now.
Yeah, nothing makes up for that Germany game though. I think that will take a little while to overcome, but yeah, definitely helped.
The wound is fresh, I'm sure. All right, number six for you, just in general, you can take this question any way you wanted to. The biggest difference between British people and Americans.
Wow, I'm not allowed to say teeth, right? I guess humor in some ways. We're very sarcastic bunch, and often sarcasm doesn't always kind of wash over that kind of dry sarcastic humor that we have. I guess that maybe humor is the biggest difference. But I laugh at all your guys over there now. So I just think maybe our humor isn't quite understood as well as it might be over there.
I don't mind that at all. There's definitely both sides of it there for sure. I want to touch into your film history again, your background, that space. So tell me your number one, or if you can't pick just one, your favorite movie of all time.
Wow, I haven't thought about that for a while. That's a really good question. I loved... I should have prepared, shouldn't I? When I was a kid, the first movie I ever saw was Back to the Future, and that was in the cinema with my dad. It was a massive moment for me. I think if I really had to choose one movie that I would watch, I think it'd be The Godfather. I think it's a tremendous movie. I loved all Luc Besson's stuff. I loved Leon the Professional. It was one of my favorite movies when I was working in the business. It's such a hard question, Neil. I should have prepared an answer for you, but I haven't, so I'm going to waffle my way through this one. Thank you.
Hey, no worries. That was fine. You hit on a lot of great films there. It's a tough question for anyone to answer. I don't even think I have a number one myself. I'd have to categorize it by comedy and drama and sci-fi.
Yeah. I think my favorite sports movie is between Raging Bull and The Natural. I've always loved The Natural with Robert Redford. I think it's such a great movie. It's something very kind of cool about the whole, the whole way it's done. And but you're right, difficult question.
Definitely a good one there too. All right, number eight for you. I know I've talked a little bit about this offline as well. Whether it's avatars in that immersive world with you or wherever it may be. How, and you can answer this in brief, how do you think VR and social media will converge in the future?
I think we're already seeing it to some extent with YouTube making, you know, their 360 content available in the way they have, and obviously Facebook. You know, I think it's inevitable that we'll be posting links to, you know, to 3D VR experiences within 12 months, I think, on Twitter and Facebook, and people being able to pop headsets on. You can already do it to some extent now in YouTube, where you can see 3D content. So, you know, people will be sharing. I think the really interesting one is who will become the platform for sharing of VR shot by the user. That will be really interesting. So I think we'll see 360 video, Neil, sharing within you know, 12 months, no question, and user-generated stuff. And I think that's the really big next phase, I think, for VR, is who captures that market best. And Facebook and are certainly hoping that it's them.
And we talk about, you know, Twitter Q&As to give access from fans to players. Imagine a Q&A where, you know, you're sitting there in the room and immersed there with the player. Yeah. That's just, oh, you talk about fan engagement. It's going to be cool to see the user-generated side and also that social community side as well. All right, number 9 for you. I love this one. We're coming to the end here. Talking with CEO of Leduma, Ben Smith. Tell me the best food to get for an American visiting the UK.
That's a good question, right? So jelly deals in the East End, something like that. No, I would. I don't think you can go wrong with. You know, in years gone by, it would have been like a proper roast dinner here in the UK. You know, something that like a roast chicken or a roast beef or something like that. These days, we've got some fantastic, clever chefs. Some of the best food in the world now here in London. So I, you know, where would I say to go? There's a brilliant chef up in Edinburgh called Tom Kitchen who cooks some amazing fish and wonderful British Scottish food there. So go to his restaurant. It's called The Kitchen. You might be surprised to know. Go to Tom's restaurant. You'll get a fantastic meal.
Very nice. Easy to remember. I've been to Edinburgh myself and had some delicacies from blood and black pudding and definitely some interesting stuff. All right, last one for you, Ben. Tell me, we are just now in a new EPL season. Who's going to win the title?
Wow, that's a big question. I think it will probably be a battle between the two Manchester clubs. Well, I think it will be with Chelsea probably just in third. I will go for Manchester City just to pip it. I think Pep Guardiola versus Jose Mourinho is going to be fascinating, though, and it may get nasty in the second half of the season, but it ain't going to be dull, Neil, I promise you that.
Ah, cannot wait. All right, Ben, you had a great Behind the Lens with Ben segment. Now your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your social media all-star to follow. Who's that person out there on Twitter or a blogger, who they are and why they're worth following?
There are so many great voices out there, aren't there? There are some brilliantly clever, wonderful people to follow. There's a guy called Ian McIntosh here in the UK who covers soccer and various other sports. He's a brilliantly clever writer, and Ian is my go. Ian McIntosh on Twitter is the guy to follow. He will make you laugh, he will make you cry, and he will probably teach you a little bit about soccer you didn't already know.
Very nice. Love that one. And how about yourself? Where can we find you as well as Leduma on social media?
Yeah, I'm at Ben Smith and on Twitter and at The Ben Smith on Instagram, which is the only one I could get. And you'll find Leduma at Leduma on Twitter. We'll keep you up to date with all the latest shoots and some of our technical know-how as well, I hope. And Leduma HQ on Instagram. So give us a follow and we'll give you a follow back maybe. How about that?
I love it. Cannot wait to see all the things Leduma is continuing to work on and innovating the space. It's been an absolute pleasure picking your brain a little bit, learning about VR, learning about Leduma. So thank you so much for the time today, Ben.
My absolute pleasure, Neil. Thank you.
And now I know you have plenty of work to attend to and a couple of little ones at home too, so I'll let you go. But again, thanks for the time and best of luck with everything for Leduma going forward. We'll be there to see it both in real life and in virtual reality as well.
Thanks a lot, Neil. Thank you.
Thank you so much again to Ben Smith, CEO of Leduma, talking to us all the way from the UK about all things virtual reality and what their company is doing in all over the space, particularly in sports. Really enjoyed it, really learned a lot, and looking forward to seeing what comes of virtual reality in the future. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horowitz, and I cannot thank you enough for listening. You can always find more information on the podcast and see other episodes at dsmsports.net, and I'd love for you to hit me up on Twitter at njh287. Until next time, this has been the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.